Hi guys, I'm Dan Reed and welcome back to the Career Dad Show. Ruben is known as the Luge Man. He's the first person to compete in four Olympics over four different decades. He talks to me how he had the dream and the perseverance to become an Olympian and how finding mentors is the key to unlocking success. Ruben's also homeschooled his kids, now 15 and 18, from day one, which gives us a lot to talk about with COVID. Ruben, how are you?
Doing great, Dan. Thanks for having me.
No, thank you so much for taking the time. I really appreciate it. And you are an Olympian. You are known as the Luge Man.
Yes, I did the luge in four Winter Olympics. And when it came time to do the website, the Iceman was taken. That would have been a lot easier. But I get these calls. They think I changed lug nuts or something. Are you the lug man? No, wrong guy.
That's brilliant. And you kind of casually say that, yeah, you know, you competed in four Olympics in the luge. But I believe that you're definitely the earliest, if not the only person who has competed in four Olympics in four different decades.
Yeah, I'm the first person to do it. There's this other guy that did it. I lucked out. The luge comes before alpine skiing. So he did it on the same Olympics a couple days later.
Brilliant.
Yep. Timing is everything.
Timing is everything. And we will come on to that, actually. There's a nice segue there. Before we do, would you be able to just give a bit of a, you know, an intro? Who is Ruben Gonzalez? You know, what let's hear a bit about you.
Yeah, sure. I was born in Argentina. My dad was a chemical engineer with Exxon, and we got transferred to the States in 1968 when I was 6 years old. And my dad, even though he didn't speak English, he jumped on it because there was a lot of bad stuff going on in Argentina back then. And so he wanted us to be in a safer place. And I lived in New York for a couple of years, then Houston, basically an oil brat, moved around a lot, and always had the Olympic dream. First saw the Olympics when I was 10 years old, and I was hooked. And the problem is I'm not a great athlete. I was always the last kid picked to play sports in school. I'm a slowpoke. I got a lot of heart, but no body to go with it. And so I didn't believe it was possible, so I didn't do anything. And I just talked about it. And my dad, after a while, he got tired of me talking the talk but not walking the walk. And he says, "Why don't you read some biographies? You know, if you like to read, if you'll study the lives of great people, you'll figure out what works, what doesn't work in life, because success leaves clues." And I thought it was really smart of him. He's an engineer. I am not, right? He was smart enough not to push me into engineering books because, he just said, read biographies of people that have done things that are interesting to you because the principles are the same in every field. And so I did. And perseverance is what I kept seeing. And as a 12-year-old, I made a decision after reading these books and seeing that it's perseverance. At least it gives you a shot, right? There's no guarantees in life, but you still got a shot. And so I made a decision, you know, from today on, Ruben doesn't quit anything. And by high school, my nickname was Bulldog because kids noticed that I was very tenacious, right? And so when I was 21, being from Argentina, you know, just like you guys, you know, we're soccer fanatics. And I played soccer all my life. You know, I'm pretty good with a soccer ball, but I'm a slowpoke. So I was still on the bench because the other guy got to the ball first. And so when I was 21, I'm watching the Olympics on TV and I see this skater. He's probably not known in England, but here he's, he's a household name, Scott Hamilton. The guy's like 5'1", 110 pounds soaking wet, and he wins the gold medal. And he gave me hope. I mean, I thought if that little guy can win, I can at least play. I'm being the next ones no matter what. It's a done deal. I just got to find a sport. And so I totally reverse engineered it. And I thought, I got to find a sport with a lot of broken bones, right? Right. So because I'm not going to do it on athleticism. I'm going to have to outlast these people, right? So I need to find something with a lot of quitters.
Yeah.
So I had to get down to ski jump, bobsled, and luge. I lived in Houston, Texas, which is really hot and humid. And so I never skied before. So ski jump, that'd have been a suicide, right?
Yeah.
So that one's out. Bobsled. Where are you going to find three other nuts in Houston who want to do the bobsled, right? You got to go to Jamaica for that. And so that left the luge. And so I'd never even seen the luge on TV. At that point in my life, if I'd have seen it, there's no way I would have done it. I just had a little picture of a guy in a luge. I thought, that's the one for me. That looks really tough. And I went to Lake Placid, took up the luge, and they had to compress 10 years of training into 2 years, because they start them off when you're 10. And because the last 2 years that you have to compete in the World Cup circuit to get points so you can qualify. And so I got hurt a lot. The guy told me, you're going to get hurt a lot. You're going to break bones. And I'm glad he did, you know, because that allowed me to put on mental armor to prepare myself for the battle ahead. He didn't candy coat it. And so I went, and 4 years and a few broken bones later, I made it. Right. And I got to go four times. And so I was just talking to a fellow luge Olympian from Virgin Islands. And I was joking with her. I said, you know what? I know I didn't win any medals, but I got to play with the big boys. So, I pinch myself. I really do.
It's because I wanted to ask you on that story, because that story is just amazing, first and foremost. And was it really a process of elimination? It was, I want to do the Olympics, so I'm going to find the thing that I just need to. Like, it's almost like the Darwinism of Olympics, right?
Yeah. Well, I'm very analytical. You know, my dad being an engineer, and I'm analytical. You know, if I can graph it, I like it. And so it just made sense to me. You know, when I say that in a presentation, right? I'm a professional speaker. People laugh, right? But when you think about it, you know, it's very logical. You know, you have to find something that fits your talents, right? Yeah. You got to find and, you know thyself, right? Socrates or Plato or one of those old smart guys said that. So you base the plan on your strengths, right? And you have to refuse to quit. And I tell everybody, you know what? Find somebody that's already done what you want to do, right? Find a mentor, a coach, somebody that's already been through that, because fear of the unknown and fear of failure are the two things that hold most people back. And most of the time, it's just a smokescreen. But if you have a mentor and you have a fear, you can say, no, just do this, this, and this. Piece of cake. What's your next problem? And so he helps you get through those fears.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, how do you think, because a lot of what you're talking about, you can transfer into the business world, right? Like whether it's going for a promotion or whether it's doing a presentation or you know, however small it could be. How would you recommend to go about finding a mentor, regardless of what capacity it's in?
Great question. And you're going to have to reel me in, okay? You're going to have to work hard, because I'm so ADD that I got tangents on my tangents, all right?
Yeah, I love it.
So you've just been deputized. You said promotion. Let me tell you, sometimes I'll tell the group, I'll say, how many of you guys want to be promoted? I mean, really, right? And you'll get a couple of hands. You know, in a group of a few hundred people, and I say, okay, great. Well, you know what you need to do? You need to go to your boss and you tell him, I'd love to get promoted. What do we need to do? Right? Can you give me a game plan? Can we meet once a quarter or once a month? So you let me know, make sure that I'm on the right track. Just by the fact that you did that, that puts you on the top of the list, because they're looking at you now. Before they weren't, right? Yeah. And if you genuinely do the things that they do, they do that you have to say that you have to do, then you'll get it, right? What was the other thing you said? You said promotion.
Presentations.
Oh yeah, no. Oh gosh, you said so. Oh, mentors.
Mentors. Yeah.
A lot of people, most people say, well, I don't want to impose. I don't want to bother them. Right? They're so busy. You know.
Yeah.
Well, you know, as long as you are willing to do what they say, you're willing to do the work, right? Because a lot of people like the idea, but they're not willing to inconvenience themselves, right? And success is very inconvenient. And so you have to take action. You have to swim uphill like a salmon, right? And so you know how you always hear that, oh, he's successful, but he's empty inside. Oh, she's successful. She's always looking for something else. It's like she's never happy. Well, you know why that is? Because success is not the gold medal. Success is the silver medal, okay? The gold medal is significance. That means you help somebody else be successful, right? You created a ripple. You made a difference. That fills in that hole, see? And so they'll help you get that silver medal, and you help them get the gold medal, right? But if you're just going to be an eternal learner and not take action, then don't bother them.
Yeah. That's the thing. I think when I've spoken to people on this and said, oh, I don't want to waste anyone's time, you know, they're so busy, and I think, but what you're really asking them to do is to talk about themselves and share their experiences. And I've yet to really come across someone who doesn't want to talk about themselves.
Yeah. And, you know, most of the people in that person's family probably think that he's nuts, you know, for because they think he's a fanatic, right? No, he's just focused, right? Or she. Yeah, yeah. He's not. Yeah. He's just off the charts focused. He's not a fanatic. And so he's misunderstood. And now here comes somebody who wants to be just like them. Man, that's like a breath of fresh air for him. So it's a good thing.
Yeah, that's really true.
I used to sell copiers in Houston. And I did that for a few years. And then right before the Salt Lake City Olympics, 2002, this little kid in my neighborhood, what was he? He was about 12 years old, like a fifth grader. He said, "Ruben, when you come back from the Olympics, will you be my show and tell project in school?" Right? Do they have show and tell up in England?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Okay. Okay, great. I was like, sure, why not? And the only reason I agreed is I thought show and tell, you know, it's 5 minutes because everybody got to show something that day, right? But I want to win. Finally going to, no prisoners. I'm going to kill. I took the sled, the helmet, the Olympic torch because I was a torchbearer. I thought, hey, I'm going to finally win something. Well, I go to the school. Principal takes me to the auditorium. It was really a cafeteria. They call it the auditorium, right? Yeah. There's 200 kids sitting on the floor. They have chairs for them. And he says, "You got 45 minutes. Have at them." They turned it into an assembly, but they didn't tell me. I thought I was going to die, right? I'd never taken a speech class in my life. Believe it or not, I'm shy, okay? Something happens. It's like Clark Kent turns into Superman when I'm talking about Olympics or personal development. It's like it's a different person, right? I love reading biographies. I'm reading one of Freddie Mercury's biographies right now. Really good one. It's called Mercury. And he was super shy too, right? And it was like a transformation. It's the same thing. I'm a different person on stage. So I thought I was going to die when I saw all those kids. That door looked so inviting. And I said a little prayer. I thought it was a desperation prayer. I said, "God, what do I do now?" And what I felt I needed to do, just tell them your story and give them some pointers to help them reach their goals and dreams, right? And I did. And afterwards, the principal said, "Man, you got a dream. You're better than people we pay. You need to do this for a living." I said, "What, you get paid for show and tell?" He said, "No, it's a speaking profession, man. Don't you know anything?" I didn't, right? So I quit my job. 3 days later, I figured if I can sell a copier, I can sell a Ruben too. Just started. I don't recommend it. Okay, it was crazy. We almost lost our house that first year. But anyway, I just started calling all the schools and getting myself booked. And the first year and a half was mostly schools. Then it became corporate because my sales background. I do a lot of sales kickoffs, right? Yeah. But it's the same stuff that I used to tell the little kids at the schools. It's the same stuff I tell the people at Fortune 500 companies. It's the same principle, right? Yeah. So, anyways. After about 3 months, we're on food stamps. I mean, we're 3 months behind our house payment. We're about, we're in deep financial trouble. Yeah. And I realized, oh my gosh, I tell everybody to find a coach or a mentor, and I'm not even taking my own advice. I got to find somebody that knows this business, right? I'm a good storyteller, but I don't know how to build this thing. So I found a guy. He was really successful. He 12 years in the business, and he finally agreed. He made me jump through a bunch of hoops to get his time, right? He wanted to make sure that I was serious. And he's testing me. And he said, "Okay, you got me for 1 hour once a month. You take me out to lunch. You can ask me whatever you want for 60 minutes. If you're smart, you get a pad of paper, right? And write them ahead of time, right? Yeah. At the end, I'm going to give you some homework, okay? If we ever meet, you haven't done last month's homework, it's over, okay? Because I don't want eternal learners." I says, "Fine. No problem, right? Except I can't buy you lunch. I'm on food stamps, okay? We'll go to Starbucks. You can have anything on the menu as long as it's coffee of the day. Put as much sugar as you want." And he said, "All right, fine." Well, the first time we meet, first thing this guy tells me is, "I don't care if you're a 10-time Olympian, unless you write a book, no one's going to take you seriously because an author is considered the authority of his subject. He wrote the..." Do you hear that little noise?
Yeah.
You hear that?
Yeah.
Okay, that was somebody just sent me a text. That's a luge going on. It's the sound of a luge, right? Wow. And if somebody calls me on the phone, it's the same bell that we hear at the start. So I'm in the zone all the time. That's a principle right there, right? Keep your goals in front of you. And so he said, "Write a book." I told him, "I can't write a book. I made C's in English. Heck, my parents celebrated if I brought a C in anything." And he says, "You got a great story. You write it down. We'll give it to some A students. They clean it up for you. That's just grammar." I thought, oh my gosh, I didn't think about that. Yeah, it's called editing. So shut up and sit down. I mean, this guy's just bashing me, right? But he taught me the business. But see, yeah. I wouldn't be an author. That book's been translated. I'm on book number 6 now, working on one number 6. But that my books, we've sold over 300,000 copies. I mean, I'm not just an Amazon bestseller. I'm a real bestseller, right? It's been translated to 10 languages. And if it had been up to me, none of that would have happened because I would have let the fear of the unknown, fear of failure hold me back. And he just said, we'll just get some A students. See, that's why you get a mentor. Right?
Yeah.
Everything I do, I don't do anything without following a mentor. It just makes things so easy.
Yeah. No, I love that. And it leads me nicely on to something else that I've heard you talk about. I've seen one of your videos and you're stood outside the Hall of Fame. And you're saying, you know, everyone who is in here started at zero. Like they all had to be new to whatever sport that they ended up rising to be the top of. And, you know, you talk about the fear of failure and finding a mentor. Do you think there's a step before that? Do you think there's that internal belief that has to happen? And is that something that you always had, the belief that you could do something? Or did it kind of just manifest through, you know, watching Hamilton on Ice?
My first book is called The Courage to Succeed. And it's not my courage to succeed, right? It's the courage, right, that anybody can have access to. Courage to get started comes from believing it's possible, right? If you believe something's possible, hey, I'll give it a shot. Courage to not quit comes from desire. You want something badly enough, ain't nothing going to make you quit, right?
Yeah.
Well, when I was 10 years old and I saw the Olympics, I had the desire, but I didn't have the belief. It wasn't until I was 21 I saw Scott Hamilton. I thought, if that little guy can win, I can at least play. Now I got the belief and already had the desire. I'm ready to take action. So you need them both.
What I was wondering, and I haven't ever heard you talk about this, so it might be a very short answer, but is there anything that you feel you've ever sacrificed along the way that if you were doing your journey again, you would do differently?
No.
That's what I thought.
Because it's, you know, I remember the first two Olympics I did back to back. I did Calgary 88 and Albertville, France 92. And then I met my wife. I had a brand new dream. I chased her for 6 years. She derailed me, right? All right. Put the sled away. I just didn't slide. I was done. And my coach, he started calling me and he talked me into coming back for Salt Lake City. And I did. And then another 6 years went by and no luge. And then I made Vancouver. Well, the first eight, I couldn't afford to, you know, we're a winter sport, right? And there's a break between Christmas and New Year's and, you know, everybody goes home to see their family. For 7 of those 8 years, I missed Christmas at home. Yeah. And so I never felt sorry about that. I remember one time I was in Calgary. I was staying at somebody's house. They all left to see their families and they left me their apartment, really, their condo for a couple of days. And I remember this is in the early days. I got my luge suit and I spent like 2 days, you know, sewing it up because I got holes all over the place from all my crashes. But I wasn't feeling sorry for myself. I wasn't even listening to Christmas music. I just, you know, I thought with every stitch, I'm a little bit faster because that's not going to be all raggedy. No regrets. Regret is you have that dream and you hold back and you don't do it.
And something you said right at the start was really interesting, that your dad being an engineer and he said, read books, but don't read engineering books. And, you know, you've got two kids, if I'm right, as well.
Yeah.
And so how, you know, you've said the Olympics is your thing. And have you been really conscious in not pushing that onto to them and helping them, I guess, find their own Olympics?
Yes, because in reading biographies, I've seen many times that somebody that's very successful, it screws up their kids because they can't live up to it, right? Mm. And they think that they're, you know, or even worse, they pressure them to do the same thing that they did, right? And it's not in their heart. And so I didn't want to make that mistake. And so we homeschool our kids. We homeschool them from day one. And I've always told them, look, the Olympics was my deal. Okay, you got to figure out what your dream is. You got to figure out what your Olympics is. And whatever it is, you got to go all out, right? I mean, you could be a gold medal teacher, or you could be a gold medal lawyer, or you could be a gold medal engineer, right? So it doesn't even have to have anything to do with sports. And they got it, right? They're all, you know, our daughter, she's going to she wants to be a Christian counselor. She's learning all that in college. And our son, we live 10 miles from the U.S. Air Force Academy. So he wants to be an aeronautical engineer and fly planes. So that's what he wants to do. And so that's great, man. See, that's you're doing it right.
I love that. And your son as well. He builds model planes. Is that right? Like remote control planes?
Yeah. He about 3 or 4 years ago, he started getting into building these, right? Actually, first flying them. Well, they're like $100. The cheap ones are $100, right? Remote control. And boom, you crash it. That's it, right? And so after a couple of planes, I told him, man, you're going to have to figure out how to make some money around here because I can't keep funding you as well.
Yeah.
And so he started learning how to fix them. And then he started learning how to build them from scratch. And he's read all these. I mean, he's 15 now, but he builds planes. He designs planes. He learned AutoCAD on his own. And he designs them and then he flies them. And he teaches other kids how to fly. It's crazy. I don't even change oil in my car. I mean, he didn't get that from me. But when I know that what your dream is, right, Grayson, you want to fly? Great. I get him around astronauts. I get him around other pilots. There's lots of pilots in this town because the Air Force Academy. I get him around people that can be his mentors, right? And then I just step back, right, and let him do it. Our daughter, Gabriella, when we went to the Vancouver Olympics, that was 2010. She was 9 years old. And she likes to write. She was a good creative writer. Mm. And I wanted her to meet all my luge friends because when both of our kids have been, they see you at a speaking at an event, you get all the, all the standing ovations and all the people, treating you like like some kind of a star. I didn't want them. I wanted them to understand. Look, standing ovation just means they liked it. Okay, it's not a big deal, right? And it really isn't. And so, and I wanted them to understand that Olympians are, we're no better than anybody else. We just had a dream and a goal, and we busted our tails for a bunch of years to make it happen. Yeah. That's all. And for some reason, people think that's cool, right? But I want you to, and she met them, and she realized that they're just like you and me. They're regular people, right? And he goes, yeah, I get it, Dad. Okay, great. So when we come back after the Olympics, we're on a daddy-daughter date at a Mexican restaurant. And she says, Dad, I want to write a book. Really? Okay, well, what's your book? Well, I want to interview 100 Olympic athletes. I want to ask them, how did you get your dream? How did you overcome your struggles? And what did it feel like when you got your victory? Right? And victory means you got it to the Olympics, right? It has nothing to do with medals. And I kept putting her off, right? And finally, she says, come on, Dad, I'm almost 10. I want to be an author. Oh, okay, fine. So we started interviewing them, right? We got about 150 of them were really good. A handful are just like big time, very well known. And that book, we sold thousands of them because it teaches people how to write for their dream. And that's, we did it together, but it was her idea. So now we're doing one with our son because he, I told him, hey, he's taking flying lessons, right? That's expensive. I said, okay, here's what you do. See all those books over there? Read them, right? Every book you read and you write me a one-page report, doesn't have to be a fancy report. I just want takeaways. What did you learn, right? Yeah. Just give me takeaways from every book you read, $10 for each one. I know he's a speed reader. He read 80 books, okay? And now we're putting them all together. Yeah, he read them, and now we're putting them all together, and the book's going to be called The Launch Pad. This is going to launch his aviation career, right? So it's the best tips from all these great books, And so now he knows. They both know, hey, the answers are in the books. Right. Find a book, mentor. Freddie Mercury is my mentor through this book. Right. Yeah. I don't have to know him personally.
Yeah.
YouTube, you can learn a lot on YouTube.
There's either a story from within, like your story, and you can tell that, or in both of your kids' cases, they're leveraging other people's stories or other people's content with their own perspective on that content. And that's anyone can do that if it's of interest and they've got the perseverance. Something else you said, which I really wanted to talk about, was homeschooling your kids, because obviously we're living through COVID at the moment where I've had to homeschool my son. But now that was very different, right? It was we're just getting the school to send him work and we're doing that work. We've now decided to unenroll him from school and we are officially now home educating him. And so it's brave new territory for me. Thank you. I think I've I'm He's six.
He's
so,
six. Oh, such
yeah.
a fun age. He
right?
hasn't
hurt you yet. No, exactly. Yeah, we're still best buds at the moment, so that's good. But it's I've really struggled in my mindset because I went into this thinking I need to be the teacher. I need to teach the curriculum. And it's thankfully through speaking to other people. And actually, you know, we spent about 2 hours playing some video games and solving puzzles and looking up on YouTube how to do things and how to apply that. And I'm thinking that's educational in some way. And I just wanted to know what, you know, you've homeschooled both of your kids right through. And I'm just wondering where that came from and what you learned along the way.
I say we homeschool. My wife is the teacher, okay?
Okay.
I'm in charge of PE. Pops, you know, pop when you
yeah.
No, but I teach them attitude. That's what I teach them. Stick-to-itiveness, attitude, mental toughness. Ever since they were six, okay, younger than that, I would tell them, look, life is tough, okay? It's going to knock you down. You're going to have bloody knees. You know what's going to happen? We're champions around here. We're all bulldogs, okay? No chihuahuas in this house, all right? And so you go, you're going to pick yourself up. You're going to dust yourself up off, and you go back in the game, okay? And you just try not to make that same mistake again. But that's what it takes. And so that made them mentally tough. If you candy coat it and you tell them you give them a ribbon for 23rd place on a race, no, those kids are going to be too soft, right? When a real adversity hits them, they're going to be flat. You got to toughen them up because life is tough. And so that's what I would do. And teachable moments all the time, right? And driving, right? Maybe you're driving and then there's a stop sign or there's a wreck. So see that plan A, we're going to try to get to our friend's house this way. And we got to find a plan B, right? But you know what? Plan A hardly ever works, okay? You better have plan B, C, D, E, F. Okay, so think ahead, contingency planning. And they do that. They think things out. And so when we were dating, when Cheryl and I were dating, I had a mentor of mine who was a couple of years older than me, and they had a couple of kids. And one time, we lived far away from each other, opposite sides of Houston. And so we would always meet at a coffee shop. So I'd never been to his house. And then for some reason, I went over to his house, and I met his kids, 10-year-old and 8-year-old. And these kids were cut above. I mean, yes, sir, no, sir, look you right in the eye, shake your hand. I mean, they were like little adults, okay?
Yeah.
I mean, they were. And I said, okay, Craig, what's the deal with your kids, man? I mean, I've never seen kids like this. Oh, we homeschool them. We control the values around here. Wow.
Yeah.
So it's always about the values for us, you know? Granted, you don't have to have a PhD in education because you're only watching one or two, okay?
Yeah.
You know, you don't have 40 kids in a classroom. And so one, you're a one-on-one time, basically, right? So you can teach them a lot.
Yeah.
When I spoke at schools that first year, I noticed, I was shocked, you know, that sometimes I'd get to be in a classroom, like I might speak to the whole class, and then I'd spend the afternoon just walking around different classrooms just to say hello and do Q&A with the kids. But sometimes I would have to wait, and I was sitting in the back, and I realized about half of the time the teachers are just trying to create order, right? Hey, Johnny, be quiet. Mary, sit down. There's not much learning going on.
So
that's why homeschool is good.
Yeah, to be honest, and that was my biggest frustration in the schooling system, that it felt like I was quite a good student at school. So I was kind of, the teacher would come up to me and a small group of us first and say, look, here's the work. I know you'll get on with it. Go. And then it was just crowd control for the rest of the class.
Yeah,
and
crowd control.
We're not getting, you know, he's right.
I'm going to write that down. But
good,
I'm not paying you royal.
That's fine. We've just knowledge exchanged on the commission fee there. So
there you go. We're even now.
Whether this is something that we do with my son through COVID or whether it becomes more of a permanent thing, I kind of hope. Well, no, I don't hope. I know that we'll be learning along the way. So whatever happens, we can still instill those values because I think that's really important too.
And there's homeschooling groups too, right? Like right now, Grayson is at a group. It's like a little. They meet at a church. It's about 50 kids from all the local, you know, the surrounding families, and they do their class there. And there's, you know, one teacher teaches, you know, all the moms teach different things, right? And they always say, oh, but they're not going to be socialized. They get socialized more, you know, and they turn into a little adults because they know how to talk to adults, right? Because you teach them right.
Yeah.
So
age groups as well, right?
Business meetings, man. It's the whole school. Business meetings, I always take them to business meetings, which is at a coffee shop, right? I'm meeting somebody. Just bring your stuff, you know. And if you have any questions, you know, feel free to ask your question. You don't have to just be, you know, and they learn. They learn how business is conducted, how adults interact. And no, it's good. It's a good thing. But,
that is so funny because, my son, sometimes he'll do some of his work in my office. I've got my whiteboard on the wall, and I work my day jobs in kind of digital and technology. So I'll have some kind of decision trees on there or something. And then he'll ask about them and we'll start doing our own decision trees that are relevant to him. And I think, it's just interesting.
Yeah. Right? And mind mapping, all that kind of stuff.
Exactly.
They learn principles, right? They're not just memorizing names of rivers or stuff like that.
Exactly. Right? That you can Google. Yeah. No, yeah. Absolutely.
You just reminded me, a long time ago, I read Henry Ford's biography, right? And everybody said, you know, you can't make an engine out of one block of steel. And he goes, all his engineers would say, that's impossible. He goes, well, it's impossible, but we're going to do it. Okay, we've got 6 months. Let's do it. And he instilled his belief, right? And he made him, failure is not an option. We're going to do this, right? But at one point, he had to go to court for something. And they sat him down. And they're asking the opposing lawyer, asking all these questions, trying to make him sound like a fool, that this guy doesn't understand engineering or automotive or anything like that. And he says, I don't even understand that stuff because I have all these hire people that understand those things. I know leadership and I get things done. I'm an executive. I put the team together and make them run. And so I don't have to know anything about that. And I thought that was brilliant. So I hardly ever memorize anything because that's just wasting space. You know, you can Google it, like you said.
Exactly. One of the last things that I wanted to ask you was about, I read as well that you like to divide your tasks into 90-minute chunks of time. And I just wanted to get your perspective on that, as opposed to, you know, especially in, you know, people are working from home with their families. And what I'm hearing from a lot of dads is, I feel like I'm not very good at anything. I'm not a very good worker. I'm not a very good father. I'm not a very good husband. And I'm just wondering, it sounds like your take on 90-minute chunks of time could benefit a lot of people listening to this.
Sure. I learned that from Edison, right? That's what he used to do. See, none of this stuff is mine, okay? No, really. I mean, you read a book and let's say Think and Grow Rich, right? And he references somebody that wrote a book 50 years before that. And that guy references a book that was written 100 years before. And I've read them all, right? Because I want to know what this guy said.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You always end up in the same place, Proverbs, right? Because it's just a list of Proverbs. So what I learned from Edison was that he would work in 90 chunks, right? 90, one task for 90 minutes. And then he'd give himself a break. And the break could be 10 minutes, 15, 20, half an hour. He had a little pond. I've been to his place. A little pond about 100 meters through a little path from one of his laboratories. And he just liked to fish. I mean, that's how, you know, that got his brain relaxed and got him thinking about things. And if he met Firestone or Henry Ford or somebody like that, you know, he'd take them out and instead of golfing, they would just fish, right?
Yeah.
And then he could walk back. And so I told my kids early on, I trained them. I said, look, I need 90 minutes, okay? And then after my 90 minutes, we got a break, okay? We can go play games. We can watch a video. Whatever you want to do for 30 minutes, you got me. Okay, I'm all yours. Because you get into a groove. Right. And if you have to change every time you change from one task to the other, you have to shift gears in the car. And you got to slow down and you lost all that momentum that you had built up.
Yeah.
Rather on one thing, you get that takes 15 minutes for most people. Right. To get that, get the peak momentum. Well, if I'm getting interrupted three times an hour, I'm always in first gear. Right.
The last question that I wanted to ask you was around, you know, there are people listening to this who either are expecting their first kids or their new parents. And I'm just building up a wealth of advice from dads. And I just want to know, what is your top parenting piece of advice?
Wow, you're killing me here, Dan. Oh, my gosh. Catch them doing stuff right. You know, whenever they're doing something right, praise them for that. Right. It's like, yes, that's right. You read that book and you gave me a great report. Awesome. Or I noticed that he opens the door for somebody at church, right? Man, I saw that. Man, you're a gentleman. I love it. And so, You have to be doing stuff right. Otherwise, they don't want to listen to you. That's just the first thing that came to mind. That's probably not the best thing in the world.
But it's think important it could be.
Leadership standpoint. As far as your homeschooling, since I travel, right? I used to travel before COVID, and now it's all virtual. But if I have a gig in New York, our daughter loves to go to New York. So she always comes with me, spend an extra day, and we just hang out. If it's Anaheim or Orlando, it's our son. He's been to Disney probably 10 times, right? And usually the client ends up paying, which is sweet. So I always would make, I would always point out to them, right? If you ever want to go to a regular school, fine, okay? But we have a lot of flexibility. I do, and so do you, right? If I get a trip somewhere that you want to go to, we can just, you know, take it. As long as you're caught up, mom says you're caught up with your stuff, we'll take off. And so they understand that, yeah, no, I'm not going to a regular school. So point out the benefits, right? Yeah. You got to be selling them on it constantly. That the older they get, the more fun they are because there's more things you can do together, right? When both of our kids, until they were a year and a half, they didn't do anything, right? Yeah. I mean, I was just cleaning up after them. And I wasn't too interested in either one of them until they were about a year and a half. My wife thought I was a monster, but I said, they don't do anything. And then about a year and a half, you start doing and communicating. And then every year becomes more and more fun because you do more stuff. So,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So you got that to look forward to.
I do. Yes, absolutely. And I'm noticing, I say my daughter, she's 14 months. So she's just getting into that phase where she's starting to do things. And which is fun. Yeah. It's good fun.
Yeah.
But look, Ruben, thank you so much for your time. It's been absolutely amazing speaking with you, and just thank you once again. That's all we've got time for this week. I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Career Dad Show. If you did, have you got 10 seconds to rate the podcast? Maybe you've got 20 and can write a review. I appreciate all of you guys for listening. See you next week. Stay cool, be kind.